that reason, outward life is a challenge for inward life to override any mistakes. If you start out saying to yourself, I don't need any sleep, one of the strangest phenomena of your mechanism is that you'll end up falling asleep. That's the phenomena of it. That's why the Indian man in this continent said, pale face speak with forked tongue. So when I went to study among them what they really meant, and I said, what do you really mean with forked tongue? Are they liars? He said, no, brother, I'm not saying he's a liar. You don't understand. His brain is set in a go-come process. Go means come in his brain. And his language sets up this go-come process. But it's not like in our language, go is go and come is come. See, that's why we don't say goodbye. There's no goodbye. All is only we have one word, welcome. And when we're ready to leave, he says, we still say welcome. So when we come in contact with Paleface, he says, bye, and then he's still sitting there. Bye, and he's gone. So it's kind of confusing to a person talking that way, and they realize that their structural language creates different mechanical movements. So when you come into English and using English to make the transition in the internal mechanics, certain words are not an asset. Like, I won't sleep. That's not an asset at all, because you'll end up sleeping. And if you say, I will sleep, that's no asset either. You'll end up not sleeping. You see what I mean? So you have to look at the word in English to beat it at its own process. So spell the word sleep. Now spell it backwards in Chinese now. So you keep peeling off. You see? That's how you right brain, left brain orientation work in English. Now take dog. D-O-G dog, right? Man's best friend. Spell it backwards, still a man's best friend. So you can then work now to organize your right brain, left brain energy flow by the words you speak. And not in English, this is the asset. In other languages, it would be difficult to do. But when you come to English, which has to do with it as a word, implying neither male or female, it's in that context the brain suddenly can utilize movements of words backward and forward to your benefit in terms of not draining you. One direction it will drain you. In another direction it will reinforce you. So that's the phenomena of the English when you speak it. Now, you used to teach people to drive and you say, go down the road and you see a sign that says stop. Read it, S-T-O-P, make a right turn. Read it backwards, you make a left turn. So if you want to go left, so you say to the person, when you come to the pot sign, you turn left. S-T-O-P. But you see, right away, the brain lock into the fact that he's going to read it backwards means left turn. But if he's going to stop and read it, and that's where I can make, you get confused. But by able to relate back and forth, the brain starts to Now, I don't know if you saw Amadeus. He was a person who, Mozart was a person who did use a lot of left brain, right brain play. And especially when you have to play an instrument, anytime you do that, you will find musicians very seldom need sleep because your brain is so attuned to the interaction that sleep seems to be very, very threatening, and they eventually don't sleep. But their creative consciousness is opening up more. So when you can take English and find a word that may mean a shutdown, just read it backwards and it releases you right away from the shutdown. It's a quick way to get control of your energy.
What about sick? What about the word sick?
S-I-C-K?
Yeah, S-I-C-K. How would you reverse that?
Well, spell it backwards.
Okay. I can't see it backwards.
That's German for kiss.
C-I-S.
German for kiss. German for kiss.
German for kiss.
German for kiss,
but I don't
want
German.
You see, that's the whole thing. Where English comes to be in different ways. All right. You understand the word telephone? Good. Imagine a Chinese guy calling his wife up and says, "Honey, Chilman opens the portrait of telephone. And then she might want to take the telephone. And she might have to take the telephone." And then you ask, "What the hell did he say?" "Oh, I said to my wife, I'm calling her with a dead telephone, so the next time she wants to call me a telephone." One word in all his language can say, what was the one word? Telephone, right. So you see, now, it's this kind of phenomenon that we find that people who hear a foreign language don't relate to it. But you pick up the one word that they relate to, and therefore we make a connection. The brain is doing this. And in English, when we program ourselves to speak, we program ourselves to work the energy into a shutdown from unconscious to drain. That's why we say we are living to die in this society, because we want to retire when? To go do what? No, I don't know if anybody saying that. They're going to retire to go phase out. And so, therefore, they're already programming a drain off of their energy in English. Now, if you quit saying that to yourself, and that you're living to live instead of living to die, the brain starts revitalizing itself, and gradually you notice you're sleeping less and less and less. But as long as you're saying you're living to retire, you're hoping for some nice day that there will be nice and no problems, you're automatically programming the system to phase down. It's going to get tired and tired and tired and tired.
How is this going to work, living to liberation?
Fine.
You can just keep saying that and
yeah.
Just going to
reprogram.
All right.
Good. Then the question comes up, which is more important? How old are you, or how many revolutions around the sun are you? You see, this one will drain your energy out. What we say it all the time. We keep celebrating what? Birthdays, getting older and older. We don't celebrate revolutions around the sun, getting younger and younger. But then when you do a kinesiological test, and that's valid, between the two words, one makes the muscles not go weak, and one keeps the muscles strong. We have tested it over and over by various means, biofeedback machines, that certain words do drain the muscle, weaken the mechanism, and tell you to make you want to sleep. And another word can increase the vitality, and you don't have the urge to sleep. So when I discovered that years ago when I was in the hospital, when they were doing a lot of biokinesis tests on me and Cass, I realized that Jesus was saying, it's not what you put in your mouth that defiles you, it's what you're saying in your sonics, the words, the very enzymes that weaken the body because you swallow your own saliva. So you have to change your language to make your body sustain you in the conscious levels instead of waiting for it to occur in some futuristic time, which is never going to happen anyhow, because the future is going to happen when?
Yeah.
Now. So for that reason, in the laws of physics and actuality, they will take the term in English that is vitalizing or rejuvenating to the mechanism and apply it to the mechanism. Then the mechanism starts now rejuvenating itself.
Is that what a mantra?
Yes, you see, the mantra was ancient man's approach to keep the brain from setting up certain sounds that would drain off the energy and make the person feel sleepy and tired. It's called prayer unceasingly, and so rosary and all these different techniques came out of that to keep the brain focused on a series of sonics that would nurture at the conscious level and the body didn't feel tired. So the most aggravating person in a trip is a person, one driver says, is the one who is twirling the rosary and everybody is sound asleep. And the one who's twirling the rosary says, would you stop, let me see this, or just and he was so tired he wanted to rest, but because he was the driver of the bus and that person had paid for the tour, he had to drive. But she, that was the only one that was twirling the rosary, all the rest was sound asleep, but he didn't want to go out of bed. He wanted to know, well, how can this person travel all over, have so much energy, and the rest were falling asleep. And he was tired himself. But she was asking where to sleep. And all she did was come to the room. And I laughed and said, you see, what she's doing is the techniques of living to live. Whereas the rest were using the techniques of living to die. They are saying things to themselves that is draining the body down and creating the need for sleep or withdrawal, suspension. Now let's look at some physical facts. When you're awake, are you in a state of tension or relaxation? When you're awake, are you in a state of tension or relaxation?
Yes,
no. Yes, no. That's a very good answer.
More tension than relaxation, yeah. Mostly tension. More tone, more tension than relaxation.
Well, as far as I know from physics. Sleep is unconscious, sensory, motor, relaxation. Non-sleep is conscious, sensory, motor, relaxation. Or conscious, sensory, motor, organic tension. Sleep is actually unconscious, sensory, motor, relaxation. Death is unconscious, sensory, motor, organic relaxation. A living person is in a state of conscious, sensory, motor, organic tension. But they give themselves periodic relaxation of sleep or apparent death. The art of dying is known as suspended animation or hibernation. That is when the body is stretched out. Now, when the person is totally stretched out, what is the term the doctors refer to it when it doesn't move? Is it in a state of unconscious sensory motor organic tension, or is it a state of rigor mortis? Now rigor mortis will trick you to believe the person is what? Tense, right? But they're not. They are totally relaxed for the first time, stretched right out and can't move. That's what the actual physics is. Rigor mortis meaning that the body is stretched out and is totally relaxed. Everything inside, all the nerves are stretched out and relaxed, not moving. Then you have the organic function, that's the heart and the lungs. They are shut down. They're not constricting or dilating. A living person is in a state of constriction and dilation by the respiration. Now, in the womb, the baby is connected to the mother by the umbilical cord. It doesn't breathe through its nostril. It's pressurized by the pressure of the umbilical cord from the mother to dilate and constrict. Take it out. Don't cut the cord. It'll hang on there like an appendage. It'll float in water. Now, as soon as you cut the cord, it's forced to breathe. The air is pushed in. It doesn't breathe in the air. If it did that, it would die. So we know that it doesn't breathe on its own. The 14 pounds pressure from the external environment is what pushes the nasal valve to open and the lungs dilate to constrict on time. And once it stays on time, now we have consciousness occurring for the first time. Sensory. The five senses can work. Motor movement. Organic pumping of the heart and the lungs. But it's not stretched out. It's going to compress itself. So it's called tension. Don't get confused that the word tension means rigid. This is a process of incorrect understanding. Conscious, sensory, motor, organic tension is life through the process of constricting and dilating on time. Eastern man used to call it yin-yang, meaning constriction and dilation. We can't have life without constriction and dilation. But constriction overrides dilation in order for it to get up and walk. Dilation is giving it temporary rest within the framework of consciousness and unconsciousness. So if you give it rest in the unconscious level, the liability of you awaking again is very, very slim. Many people don't wake up when they go to sleep. Like Benny Goodman, not too long ago. But they love to know that they went to bed and didn't wake up because they served their time and there were no misery in a hospital or otherwise. But if the realized person did that, we know he's not realized. But if he can sit down in the room and look at you, talk, he says, bye, folks. And then you go measuring. He's apparently unconscious to you, but totally not shut down by the current. That's what Yogananda did in his country. In Los Angeles, he was speaking to a large crowd of people. And when he was finished, he looked at them all around and said, and he consciously shut the body down. And when they took him to the morgue and they examined him, Dr. Rowe declared, technically, this body is not dead. Therefore, he couldn't give a death certificate. And that was the doctor's own observation. And the body showed no signs of breaking down. But he consciously shut the body down and went into a conscious, sensory, motor, organic relaxation, not an organic tension. He was in a conscious, sensory, motor, organic tension, looking at the crowd, talking to them, dilating and constricting, and then consciously shut the whole organism down and lay down there in a relaxed state. To show that this body has two options. Non-decomposition, to leave you wondering why you don't rot. Or take it and come and visit you by coming through the wall instead of the door. That's the other option it has. It's called dematerialization at will. Some people call it resurrection. Now, there's a difference between a communication with a saint and a communication with spirits. No spirit will ever give you a realization because you didn't make it yet. But the saint will give you realization because he made it. And the evidence is this. He will come through the wall, not through the door. He will sit down and eat with you and leave you food that will not rot no matter how it tries. You don't have to refrigerate it. As a scientific evidence, you can have it to play for the next 100 years. Once he touches it, his vibratory rate has transformed it. But every time he leaves you, you go through the wall. Now, if you have a mirror in the room all around, when he sits down there, he casts no shadow, he leaves no footprint, but he sure is going to eat his share of food, and your pot is going to be empty when he's gone. That's to tell you that he is no imagination. When Jesus did that to Thomas, Thomas' first remark says, "Oh, you're a ghost, you're an apparition." Meaning, anybody, any apparition can walk in the room and say he's Jesus. But if the real thing is a real thing, it's got to prove itself, if it's there or not. Then he says, "Come, check. Put your hand in the room, find out, test it out." Then he touched something that is tangible then to put it up. Then he left them by going through the wall. Now, years ago I met a man. I went to see him on certain research problems. And he went into the hospital for a checkup on a Monday. I saw him on the Sunday, before the Monday, and he told me, "Come back next Sunday and I'll see you. I have the data for what you're looking for." The next Monday, which is the next day, he went to the hospital for a checkup. He was there until the Wednesday. And during the Wednesday, he said to his daughter, "Go get me a newspaper." And the daughter had to go down out of the hospital ward to get the newspaper. Then he said to the wife, "Join me in meditation." So he sat down facing the wall to meditate. And she was sitting on the side. She told me this afterwards on the Sunday. That same Wednesday, I'm saying to my friend in the hotel, "I got a sneaking suspicion I'm going to get let down." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "The guy who can give me that data ain't going to be around." He said, "Oh, come on, Adam. You're always full of these crazy things. And you always seem to want to make it materialize." I said, "No, I'm picking it up. He ain't going to be around." That Wednesday, Thursday, the Sunday morning, Saturday night, I deliberately put the clock up to get me up to go to the place at 10 o'clock. We went to bed. I couldn't sleep. The alarm would not go off. Even though it was set to go off at 10, it wouldn't go off. It woke up at look at the thing, how fast it was late. We got together, washed up, got on the road to go to the place. Every red light on the road is showing up. And I've got a good 15 to 20 minutes drive. You can imagine everybody. You can't beat the light. No matter how fast you get there, you're hitting the red light. So I'm laughing to myself. He said, "What are you laughing about?" I said, "It's too obvious. I got all the clues at this." He says, "Oh, you're always up." We arrive at the place, and we're going up the alleyway to the church, and the girl, two people are ahead of us. As soon as they pass the gate, the girl closed the gate. She says, "Sorry, downstairs is occupied. That's the last two people going. You folks have to go to the other auditorium. And you'll get the public address system, but you can't come. That's what it's pulled up." I'm looking at the timing. I said, "Okay, go downstairs." And the program started, and all of a sudden, halfway through the program, the public address system comes up. Ladies and gentlemen, we're sorry to inform you that the Dr. So-and-so, who was supposed to be here to give the lecture to everyone, will not be here because he passed away on Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So I look at my friend and says, that's it, they're cool. I says, but I got to see his wife. Well, where is she? In this big crowd, I'm going to find her. She was the only person that had the papers on it. So I headed to the building, and there was an alley. I said, I'm going to go around the alley and come back by the front of the building. And I'm heading through the alley to come around the front. Who should be coming out through the back door? His wife. And she said, Adano. I said, Mrs. Gates. Mm-hmm. She said, I have your paper for you. I said, that's fine. All I wanted to know, how did the doctor die? Could you tell me? Was that too much to say? She says, no. You'll understand. He said he was meditating. When he asked to meditate, he shut down Dr. Tom for the newspaper. While she was going to get the paper, he asked me to sit down with him to meditate. And he said, he is facing the wall. And all of a sudden, right out of the wall, stepped Yogeshwara Yogananda. Mm-hmm. And said to him, are you ready, doctor? And he looked up and he said, yeah. So Yogeshwara stretched his hand. They embraced each other, and they turned around and looked at his wife, and said, bye, honey, and he walked away. And he broke the shore. She said, oh, no. Well, this guy is 6'3", and he weighs 240 pounds. How is she going to lift this guy and put him back in his bed to convince the nurse that he's dead? She could come in there to call a nurse and see a man sitting in a lotus position, meditating, facing the wall, and he's dead. That would be hard to explain, right? She says, all I could do was, please, Master, give me some kind of power, because I can't explain this to nobody. So she reaches to pick up her husband, and to her amazement, he was left like a pillow of feathers, having no weight, and she just lifted the whole turner body, put it in the bed, stretch it out, put the sheet up, and she went to the door, called the nurse. The nurse came in, and she took the pressure. She says, well, I guess he must have had a stroke. That was her comment. She called the doctor. By that time, the daughter's coming back upstairs in the newspaper, and they seen the mother, and the daughter started to cry. She held the daughter and said, no. The doctor came, checked it, gave all the indication he's passed away, but he cannot understand why should he pass away. There's no indication of the checkup that he was supposed to have any problem. He never, because the rep, actually didn't have anything. They just had all the things run through. Now, that was the funny part. And so the doctor did some other tests, and he said, you know, technically, I can't really say this person is dead. Because though everything shows shut down, the body feels too warm to indicate that kind of a condition. And so he left in his will that the body be cremated. He didn't want the body to be buried. So she had to fulfill his wish. But then she told me exactly what was happening. That the person has the ability to shut down. Now, this happened the Wednesday, and that was the Sunday. I was getting ready to return back to Houston the following Wednesday, and I got a phone call from her on Tuesday, telling me it's urgent, I want to see you, I have something for you. And when I met her, she said, you wouldn't believe this. I said, I believe anything you tell me. He was home last night visiting me, and he had a cup of coffee with me. To this day, he makes periodical visits and have a cup of coffee with her.
Dr. Lewis?
Yeah. Indicating the realized saint versus the non-realizable. People say they believe in mediumship and have contact with beings that tell them all kind of information in the future. But genuine saints don't have that. They don't have that to offer you. if you want to realize yourself. If you want to realize yourself, they offer you permanent life in the form. And it's called resurrection. Or the art of non-decomposition and materialization and dematerialization at will.
The Supreme
Being.
But he was cremated.
Yes.
But so he just used his energy to
dematerialize? Well, let me explain again. Your body and mind is made up of 144 elements. That's all the elements there are in the universe. If you cook it, freeze it, or do anything, or blow it apart, where will the 144 elements go? No. It's only held together by 14.7 pounds pressure. No matter what you do, once the pressure disengages, you fool yourself to believe it's a true one. That they really cook somebody there? Once the pressure is disengaged, the observation level is an illusion that it's going to go through burning or decomposing, or it's going to be stored in a room, because that principle is operating already. So the atoms don't go anyplace, they're here already. So to satisfy man, after he realizes himself, is that a form will not separate. Right here in this tomb, there is a coffin of a man who is actually in the body, in another part of the world, whose body isn't decomposing. And when they ship that body, they pour lime over it to prevent it from rotting. The lime ate through all the clothing, but didn't eat through the skin. And that body is still in existence. The research, there's a book called The Incorruptibles, over 300 case histories. You can find it in a bookstore. And 80% of the case histories are women. So when we begin to look into the actualness of truth, there's more than we understand, because these things are going on in spite of the fact that we may not be involved in it. We're over-programmed very heavily with the idea of death. We're over-programmed with the idea of breaking down. And the churches are trying to do their best to raise our conviction, but placing emphasis more on belief than the actual laws involved. Because we don't have enough ways to explain it to ourselves what the actual laws are. But those who have achieved it and those who talk to us and come back to validate it haven't gone anywhere. And I'll put it this way to sum up my conviction. I accept the communication of the saint in the living body and the correction of misapplied mistakes and decisions while in the human body. This ability and opportunity is within the framework of my mechanism for me to correct my misapplied decisions. You may call them sins in a agricultural language. In a realized consciousness, it's going to be misapplied decisions. As far as the communication with the saint, the individual who has achieved the non-decomposing body is the only sane person there is. Everybody is insane. Therefore, that kind of communication I am seeking. If I'm seeking insanity, then I'm seeking death. If I'm seeking sanity, I'm seeking life. And life eternal is valid. Not in the sense that we think it is. It has two options. An option where this mechanism can show no sign of decomposition. The second option is this mechanism can be taken by the volition through time and space into the atomic field and crystallize and decrystallize it with Therefore, it's called, to him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time, but I'll make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. Any human being who overcomes unconsciousness by the mechanism is subjected to and remains conscious in 24 hours, 7 days a week, is a pillar in the creation and has two options. One, non-decomposition. Two, dematerialization or rematerialization at will. Therefore, the unified field is too big to be lacking for our atoms to fit into. We could never totally occupy the unified field. Even there may be 60 trillion people and all of us decide to enter the unified field, it would be like a drop in an ocean. We could never really run out of space. When you think of it, we're busy spending money to go from here to the moon and other places, when the realized man is traveling the entire cosmos at will.
I understand everything you're saying. Could you explain the difference between, I know that there are those who can, their body, physical body can be in one place and they will appear someplace else. That's materialization. Could you explain the difference between decomposition and materialization? Are you saying that the body, like Yogananda's body, for instance, was not
decomposed?
Decomposed, no. Is not.
Doesn't break down.
But that is not necessary for someone to come back.
That's one option. Yogananda comes and visits me through the wall. But he leaves us this body so we can say that he did exist in America. But he appears many times to his disciples and sit down and talk and eat. So years ago when I wanted to see him, he was living in America and I was living in Canada. And he told me, don't come and see me. And I don't want to see you. So his disciple wrote a book called The Path. He wanted to go and see the man that Yogananda didn't want to see at all. And when we met, we exchanged ideas. And I said to him, your role in this world is to be a monk. My role in this world is to be a worker, an everyday guy, called a householder. But when Yogananda passed away, I was in Canada at the time, and I got the notification that he had passed on. And I took the note and I said, well, I missed the boat. I should have gone and see you. I should make every attempt to go see you. I don't know nothing. And all of a sudden my eyes closed down and I heard his voice saying, you know it. What do you want? To my amazement, to this day, whenever I need to see, not when I want, he says, like, how you sit down there, look at me, so big deal. Am I in Forest Lawn or am I in the atom? Or am I you? He's validating creative consciousness in any form to satisfy the student's doubt. As he progresses, and as soon as the student loses every doubt, what does the student realize in the end? That Yogananda and himself are one and the same. I'll give you another example of it. There was a nun by the name of Teresa, Catherine. She wanted to see God, and Jesus came to her. And she said, but I want to see God. So Jesus' face disappeared, and her face appeared in the body where Jesus was standing, looking back at herself. And she said, no, I don't want to see that. But that was God looking back at herself, giving back my Jesus. And from that day on, she never wanted to see God, but realized Jesus acting the role was the only way she could lock into God. Her humility was so great that it gave her greater aspects of her spirituality. And that same person, when she left the body, showed no sign of decomposition. And to many who are sincere in their belief, she appears to them. That's why we call it the communion of saints. See, the genuine communication of saints does exist, continue to exist in this world among people, and they don't go to show off or to intellectualize. It's primarily to make us realize what we are. Essentially, we are the creative life. But we don't accept it, we shut it out. Non-decomposition is a principle locked up in nature, in the tissue. And the first manifestation is a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, evidence of non-decomposition. There is no such thing as a rotten butterfly, just as much as there is no decomposing realized person. Yet, at the same token, that same realized person can do another principle, be visible or invisible at will. And this is what Jesus did. Kabir did that. When Kabir was alive, he tried to resolve the anguish between Muslims and Hindus. And they would eventually listen to him. The time when he came to die, he stepped into the coffin and lay down. And the Hindus say, according to our tradition, we cremate the body. The Muslims say, according to our tradition, we bury the body. While they were busy arguing what to do, Kabir stood up out of the coffin, looked at them, and disappeared right in front of their eyes. But he left them two roses in the coffin. The Hindu took their roses and they cremated it. And the Muslim took their roses and they buried it. And the coffin is still empty and Kabir is gone through the wall. But he does come back and visit the few devout ones to give them conviction that the body is totally cosmic. He's not the only one. There are many others. But in every nationality and ethnic group and belief system, there are those who have gone through the actual science. What we're trying to say is the thing is a science. Thank you.
We have tofu outside, and thank you. Great.
I'm Thank you very much.
Hi there.